Talked a lot of Tribe earlier in the show, getting ready for the opener tomorrow against the Twins. But don't forget, while baseball will dominate a lot of the headlines, the Sweet 16 kickstarts tomorrow. Second full weekend of action in the NCAA tournament. And time to turn our attention now towards some hoops as we speak with Daniel Helm, former Division I assistant coach who knows a lot about this NCAA tournament. Dan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing great.
Doing well.
I'm even better now that I hear you have some meatloaf cooking in the kitchen. And, boy, I know that the meatloaf connoisseur that Matt Douglas is, he's pretty fired up about that, too. So, you know, we're all doing well, my friend.
I will say this. Dan's the only guy who hasn't said, I haven't tried his meatloaf yet. That is the typical response when you tell someone you don't like meatloaf.
Oh, that's silly. If you don't like one meatloaf, you don't like any of them.
There you go. Thank you.
Very true.
Thank you for understanding, Dan.
All right. The only way you can make him hate meatloaf even more is if you put pickles
in
your meatloaf.
That's probably true.
Yeah, he couldn't stand that. But, well, an interesting first weekend, my friend. But really mostly chalk at this point, entering the Sweet 16, Oregon, the lowest seed remaining. But, you know, as we talked about the Ducks last week, even they had some juice going into the tournament, so it wasn't a total shock to see them come out of the opening weekend and play into the Sweet 16 round. Did they have any shot, you think, against Virginia?
They do. They can score, but, you know, and I think you look at Virginia and everybody, they're going to kind of have that mark hanging over their head because they lost last year as a one seed to a 16 until they win a national championship. That stain will kind of always be on that program. And you saw it really impacted them for, you know, 25 minutes of that game against Gardner-Webb. They were down 14 at one point. You know their players had to start thinking, oh, here we go again. But they locked in really well against Oklahoma, completely controlled them, had their best three-point shooter, went 0 for 10, and still won that game by double digits. I think Virginia's just too much for them. Oregon's playing well at a good time. But I think you just, you know, you've got a matchup of just too good of a team. You know, but you talk about going chalk, and, we're so used to so many upsets and buzzer beaters, and there was a couple, and we talked about the ones, and they weren't really into even that shocking, even though you get into the double digits. We even talked about that 13 seed UC Irvine, you know, playing a banged-up Kansas State team. But I think that really what it is the top 8 to 10 teams are just that good this year. That they've really separated themselves from the pack.
Yeah, and I think that's something that certainly stands out to me. Not only the strength of the one seeds, and I think that's been very well documented, but the strength of the two seeds is what really kind of stands out to me here also. I mean, every now and again, you can look at a two seed and say, you know what, there's a softy that might not make it out of the first round, but boy, Dan, I think you can make the argument that this year, that boy, this group of two seeds is awfully close to, if not as strong as, this group of ones, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of the talk going into Selection Sunday actually this year wasn't bubble talk, but there was a lot more, you know, just from all the pundits and everything, it seemed there's a lot more conversation of who the final four one seeds would be. And I think that just shows what you're saying, is really ringing true, that those two seeds were so close. You know, Michigan State, if they were a one seed, would anybody really complain? Tennessee was number one in the country for 14, you know, weeks in a row, I think. You know, we've obviously seen how good Kentucky could be after they had such a slow start. And then Michigan's the other one. And, you know, they beat Michigan a couple times. They were in the Michigan State a couple times. They were in the national championship game last year and have, that experience. So those teams are really, really good also. And then you get to the threes, and those are where the wild cards are. That have a lot of potential to do damage as well.
Well, speaking of all these matchups here, and there are some really good ones going on the next couple of days, are there one or two that are more compelling to you than the rest in the Sweet 16 round?
Yeah, I think, you know, one that's going to kind of fly under the radar, well, maybe not because it's Kentucky, but Kentucky's best player has not played yet in the tournament. He's in a walking boot. They showed him he's wheeling around on one of those one-legged carts that Andy Vergeau made, you know, pretty famous, needing one about every other year here in Cleveland. But they're out with him, and P.J. Washington is his name, so he may not play this weekend. They play a Houston team that, you know, really won both their games handily, and they controlled Ohio State kind of from, you know, the first 5 minutes on. and it'll be, I think it's just a team that not a lot of people know because they're not on TV as much. I think that's going to be a game that where they're both really good from the perimeter, a lot of good guard play. So that's going to be pretty evenly matched up. And then, you know, who is going to be fantastic is North Carolina versus Auburn. I don't know if there'll be defense played in this game. The over-under might be about 199 on this. So if you like offense, tune in to North Carolina-Auburn. It might be first team to 90 wins that game.
Boy, Bruce Pearl has really kind of resurrected that Auburn program, and he has looked exceptionally good, not only in that opening weekend, but, you know, I've been following them for a good chunk of February and into March. And, you know, I don't think I realized just how good this team was until I finally saw him play his former team in the SC championship game. But, you know, that's one of the lower seeds remaining in the tournament right now. That is an awfully dangerous number five seed, isn't it?
Yeah, and they were, you know, and it's funny because it's so long ago, but back in November and early December, they were a top 10 team. They were in that Maui Invitational where Gonzaga beat Duke. They took Duke to the end and I think lost by 6 or 7 points. I think they were ranked 7th or 8th at the time. I got to see them play again. They played Dayton and beat Dayton by 10 or 15 points, but controlled that game from the start. And they've got a couple guards that can really, really light it up. But what happened is they get that kind of that mid-season lull. You lose 3 of 4 or so on the road in SEC play. And you drop and people kind of forget about you. But, you know, they've had a tremendous season. They've gone toe-to-toe with Duke. They've gone toe-to-toe with Tennessee. They've beaten Tennessee. They beat Kentucky once. They're not going to be afraid of North Carolina.
Certainly looking forward to that matchup amongst many others. Again, we're talking about the March Madness tournament, which will resume again tomorrow. Dan Helm joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, well, we've got to get this question out of the way, and I think because so much of this is about matchups, you know, I think sometimes we make too much or too little out of one particular matchup. You think Duke got their bad game out of the way, or do you think maybe they were exposed a little bit against UCF, or was that just a really bad matchup for them that they were fortunate enough to survive?
Can I say yes to all of those?
Okay.
You know, you look back at it, though, every team has a game like that, whether it's, you know, Tyus Edney, he had to go coast to coast. I guess it's probably been 95, so I'm dating myself a little bit. He goes coast to coast against Missouri in the 1-8 matchup in the second round to win. If that ball doesn't go in, UCLA doesn't win the national championship that year, and they win the championship game by like 20 points. So it's a little bit of that. But what Duke's biggest weakness is, and we talked about it last week, is their three-point shooting. And UCF obviously has a big guy that they can leave in the middle. He's 7'6", 300 pounds. But they left him, if you look, they just tempted Duke to take threes. And they were there to rebound. And that's what Duke did. Duke kind of fell for it. They were missing a lot of open threes. But they found ways to win. And that's what great teams do. And UCF, you know, you can debate a little bit on some of the calls. But UCF tried to get a little fancy. They had an opportunity on a fast break for a layup. They went for the alley-oop. Would have put them up 6 with about a minute and a half left. Duke comes down, hits a 3 within 7 seconds, and it's a 1-point game. That, to me, is the difference in the game, not the putback or the missed shot at the end, which were all heartbreakers. But, yeah, I think you'll see a lot of teams, they're going to pack it inside a little bit, force Duke to beat them from the outside, and that's what Duke's going to have to do. But you also have a guy that is unique with Taco Fall. He's 7'6". He is going to be able to neutralize Zion Williamson a lot on the glass, and there's no one left like that in the tournament.
Does that make them a little more scary? I mean, as Bull kind of points out, some people may see it as a weakness. They struggled against that UCF team, but the fact that somebody else forced them to play a game that's not technically their style and they still found a way to win, I would think that's a warning to the rest of the field. Hey, they're this good.
For sure, and Coach K said that after the game. He just talked about how proud he was that his team adjusted and found a way to win. You know, we talk about that, like a team like Syracuse, anytime you play a team like Syracuse or Virginia with the way they play defense, you've got to adjust your style, and that's what championship teams do. You can't be set in, you know, one way. I mean, I think we saw it locally when Olmsted Falls ended up beating Lorraine. Lorraine just couldn't adjust to that zone, and you need, you know, great teams find ways to win. And when you have the best player on the floor in every game, which Duke will have for going forward, it'll be tremendous. But what I really would love to see is a Duke-Michigan State matchup. I know, Bull, that you're going to be pulling for the Spartans, but, you know, Tom Izzo can coach, Coach K can coach, and that's a team that can really defend those guards. So, you know, I'm really pulling for both those teams to win so we can see that this weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, the winner of that one advances to the Final Four, if indeed they're both fortunate enough to survive their first matchup here, too. But as much as it pains me to admit this, Tom Izzo hasn't had a whole lot of success against Coach K. Then again, not many coaches have. But, boy, Tom Izzo, that's certainly been one of his bugaboos. He's had a real hard time beating Duke, but that would be a fun matchup for sure. And I guess that kind of leads me into my next question. You know, because Duke has been looked at as the odds-on favorite, you know, for most of this tournament, with all due respect to the other one seeds as well, is there anybody out there that can kind of do what Central Florida did? I mean, is there anybody out there that can, I mean, yeah, you mentioned, you know, Taco Fail. He can't really, you can't replicate a 7'6", 300-pound guy, right? But is there anybody out there that can kind of do what they did?
Well, Virginia plays great defense, and they lost to Duke twice this year, but it was both by single digits. In one game, Duke started out, I think, 9 of 10 from 3, which is completely uncharacteristic of this Duke team. And you think if they played for a third time, I just don't know if Duke can shoot the ball that well. You know, if they match up with Gonzaga in the Final Four, Gonzaga has the athletes and went toe-to-toe with them and won that game back in Maui. I mean, a lot has changed. And then I think North Carolina is in Duke's head enough. I know that they just beat them with Zion, but North Carolina's kind of had their number the last couple of years. So, you know, and the other thing is, as good as this Duke team is, they are the only team in this whole bracket remaining that are relying on freshmen. I mean, you look at teams like Michigan and Michigan State, their guys have been there. Gonzaga and Florida State are playing. They played each other last year in the Sweet 16. The North Carolina guys are older. Even Kentucky is relying on sophomores and a redshirt senior. Tennessee is older. Virginia is older. So, you know, you're looking at a lot of teams that have been there before, and these Duke games, these Duke guys, although they've played on national TV every night, the stage gets bigger and bigger, and it's a new place for them.
One of the interesting things also about this tournament is that, yes, we all love the upsets, no question about that. We love the buzzer beaters. As a result, I think we're always expecting the biggest domino to fall. But you mentioned it earlier in the interview here, Dan. I mean, the idea that, I mean, this year you've had very, very good teams. It's kind of top-heavy, this tournament, just a little bit. I mean, those first eight teams, you know, the ones and the twos are so extraordinarily good that that hasn't really left a whole lot of room for a great deal of upsets. So I guess my next question would be, who do you think is the next obvious giant to fall here? I mean, and we're all waiting for the upset, and until you see a number one seed fall, you know, nothing really is looked at as a, like a cataclysmic shift here. Do you think any one of these one seeds are especially vulnerable in this next round?
You know, Florida State did beat Gonzaga last year in this same round, same matchup out west, and Florida State is athletic enough. But at this point, you know, a 4-1 isn't nearly what, you know, UCF over Duke would have been. And I think everybody left last weekend with a little bit of a disappointment. There wasn't, you know, LSU kind of hit a layup against Maryland in a game that wasn't that great at the buzzer. Wofford kept it close against Kentucky. There was a few double-digit seeds win. But I think everybody kind of left last weekend a little disappointed, you know, like there was something still left on the table. But what that has done has left, I mean, you look at these matchups for Thursday and Friday night. I mean, is there a game you don't want to watch? I mean, you're going to, you know, sometimes you get to a point where if UC Irvine was playing, you know, Virginia in the Sweet 16, you're going to be like, eh. But now you're looking at, you know, Purdue, Tennessee, two underrated teams. North Carolina, Auburn. I mean, I just keep looking at the bracket. I can't wait for these games. So although we feel a little disappointed from last weekend, I think it really sets up for a lot of fireworks this weekend.
Hey, we all love fireworks, and you know what? The sun's out, it's 50 degrees. We're all dying to shoot those off right now. We've been trapped inside for so long. All right, I've got to cut you loose on this, my friend. I mean, we all focus on the teams and the matchups, but a lot of times it's about the individuals as well. I mean, we could certainly point out the Dukies as well because they've got a number of great individual players. But outside of Duke, have there been any other individuals that have really kind of stood out to you over the first weekend as the most impressive in your mind?
Yeah, to me, it's Cassius Winston from Michigan State. He scores the basketball. He defends better than anybody. I think he was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year as well as Big Ten Player of the Year. And the other thing that's kind of that you can't put in a stat sheet is I know there's a lot to be said about Izzo's temper and everything, but he was the one who took control of the huddle. He's the communicator between the coaches and the players. He really is the coach on the floor. And for him to be able to settle everybody down, keep everybody in the right frame of mind as they kind of battle through a tough game against Bradley, really set the stage for them to come out and really just beat Minnesota handily. I really like his game on both ends of the floor, but what he does as a leader as well, he's really been, kind of the underrated player of the tournament.
Those are the kinds of intangibles you certainly can't look past, especially come tournament time. Dan, always a pleasure, my friend. We appreciate the time. Always love talking NCAA hoops, and we'll do this again next week. We're down to the field of four.
Gentlemen, I can't wait to do it. Matt, I can't wait for you to try my meatloaf.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
That was awesome. Thank you kindly, sir.
Is that like a mic
Thank
drop?
You guys.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was great stuff. Dan Helm talking NCAA college hoops with us. Some March Madness entering the round of the Sweet 16.